Welcome to Canque, home of Canada's Queer Media. My name is Luke Smith.
And I am Sebastian.
And we want to just thank our loyal listeners. We took a little bit of a break there the last couple of weeks as we went to the National Community Radio Conference.
Yes, we did. It was in Toronto.
Absolutely. And it was a great conference. I had a lot of fun. I mean, I was actually there in terms of work. I was there as part of my occupation. A couple of people came up to me and said, "Luke, your mic technique needs some serious work there, guy." So the not so subtle hint to do better was dropped by not one, but two different radio stations.
Okay.
Were like, "Luke, what are you doing? Come on now. You can do better."
My mum.
Also, your mum said that you can do better. My mum would as well, except I don't think she's listened to me in a little while. So we'll see how that goes. But what we did is we took this time to, first we cried about it. I did. It was sleepless nights. I was tossing and turning. That and the heat. Oh, my days. The heat these days. It's so warm. I need AC. Do you have AC?
I do. It's in the living room, though. So that means I have to leave my bedroom door open, which means I have to keep it clean so that people walking by don't look in there and go, "Who lives like that?"
They're not super judgy.
Yeah, it's life is hard.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The struggle for AC in the summer, it's real.
Yeah, it is. I have a very large fan that's basically always pointed right at my face. So that's nice.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I've got this thing, too.
A little handheld.
I have a little folding fan that I got this from. Her name was Matsuo Korika, and I really liked her. She was a nice lady.
A lovely lady.
Yeah.
So we, after crying about the feedback, what we did was we're like, you know what? There's something in this. We need to do better. We need to improve so that what you're hearing as the listeners is, among the top quality that we can provide.
Or we just need to be more selective, because there's at least two separate facilities that we frequently use. And occasionally, like, it's been a while, but we have also stepped into, not CKCU, CAHUO.
Yeah, in Ottawa.
It's using a professional setup when available is definitely going to be a thing, because we drift around a bit.
Yeah. So what we've also done is we asked for feedback from the station, such as where you're hearing this right now, to ask them, what do you think we should do to improve Canqueer, the home of LGBT media in Canada, or news anyway in particular. And what we've what we heard and what we settled back on is that people like when we focus on one particular topic. I kept telling everyone that we'd spent 20 minutes talking about walking quickly. Don't even get me started on that. I think it was one of my favorite shows is talking about walking quickly. But people are like, "How is that gay?" And I'm like, oh, you don't even know. Wait till I tell you about how walking quickly is gay.
It's one of those things that it's not necessarily gay, but not doing it is definitely straight.
That's true.
Yeah.
That's true. I read something recently, and it was, there's so many new acronyms out, like LGBTQ2. I think the special advisor is the LGBTQ2 lead special advisor, and there's GSM, and SOGI is really popular out west, which is, whenever I ask for what the acronym stands for, I never get a straight answer.
Sexual orientation and gender identity.
You ruined my joke. you ruined my joke.
Oh, I didn't know it was a joke.
I was going towards a joke.
Okay.
Whenever I ask for the definition, never get a straight answer.
Okay.
SOGI is really popular at West, which is, as you said, sexual orientation and gender identity, not social orientation. I'm socially oriented towards the West, personally. But anyway, I digress. So we asked about it, and we're like, how do we do better? And you folks want more single-focused. So we are going to be bringing that to you. There's so much that has happened.
We're going to do some deep dives. It's okay to do, because there's a few. I like the format of having a small story that's light and fluffy, a big story in the middle, and then end it off with there's always more than one thing happening at any given time. Oh my gosh,
we never get to everything.
So giving more news from more of Canada, I mean, it is good to have, you know, end it off with maybe a few light stories or a few brief stories or a few stories. Maybe they're serious, but there's just not much to say.
Like a nice palate cleanser. I feel like we should be finishing with like a cucumber ice. Have you had one of those thingies? Like a cucumber sorbet, like a very fancy palate cleanser?
Nope, yes, actually, me. I went to an Italian wedding years ago. And by the way, a 13-course meal sounds inedible. But while you're there, at the end of the 13 courses, you're just sitting there like, I'm still hungry. Because they pace it up perfectly. McDonald's. Well, the I think it's the fourth and the ninth courses are palate cleansers. And they're always very, very bitter. Mm-hmm. And the bitterness is supposed to, like, help with digestion so that you're more hungry for the next 49 courses. But one of them is a very bitter, like it's a vegetable-based sorbet. And a bitter ice cream sounds nasty, and it is nasty, but it serves a purpose, which is...
Well, the one I had wasn't bitter. Yeah. It was a very nice cucumber. And I feel like that's what our closing story should be.
Well, it's not a cucumber and watercress sandwich.
Oh, those are delicious.
Yeah, they are, yeah.
Especially if you're feeling very fancy... Cut them into triangles and cut the crusts off with a nice cup of tea. Very, very fancy.
And I've seen people just put the cress leaves on there, but I like the cress stems. They're nice and crunchy. And they've got a peppery aftertaste.
Back, so way off topic. also feedback. Stop talking about cress sandwiches. Get to the gay stuff. So there's so much going on. We are recording shortly after Toronto Pride, which was, you know, by all intents and purposes, or all measures, a great success, loads of people. You know, it seems to have done really well. We were worried about the economic impact in terms of Pride Toronto's finances. We'll be keeping an eye on them later in the year when they release their finances to see what that impact was. Because they reduced the number of stages. But broadly speaking, there wasn't too much happening there that... kind of triggered.
Not on the grids. I tried looking up a few follow-ups because last year there was a few major stories and I tried to find information about how that panned out this year and I couldn't really find much of anything. So last year they introduced street drinking outside of dedicated beer gardens, which Ontario is trying to transition into more of a European model of how we do alcohol sales and alcohol consumption. And I couldn't... Like last year there was a lot of people celebrating it and a lot of people protesting it. It's a very mixed thing. And this year I couldn't really find any information at all. So either people don't mind anymore or there wasn't any problems or I don't know. It's hard to say. Because no information is no information. You can make up any story you want.
It also may not have really come to the fore.
Yeah.
What we have found is we know that Olivia Nwamo, who's the executive director of Toronto Pride, tends to get herself into more trouble than not.
Yeah.
Somebody tweeted that, posted within the grounds of Toronto Pride was a printed out land acknowledgement statement, essentially saying, this is important to us.
Okay.
With a little bit more, and then it says Miigwech at the end, which I think is Anishinaabe.
Okay.
And somebody, an indigenous person said that, you know, the content in it was awful.
Okay.
It was just badly done.
Right.
And the official Twitter of Toronto Pride replied, well, it was written by an indigenous person.
Okay.
Lowercase I, which and it should be an uppercase I.
Okay.
And they're like, this is the problem that we said that you have done badly. And you were like, no, but our single indigenous person who wrote this wrote it. So therefore, we are fine.
Tokenism, though.
Exactly. Yeah. And like that was the feedback. And it was the lack of penny dropping for a lot of the thread. And then Olivia directly emailed a couple of people and they just like screenshot and share it back to the thread. And it was... So even though nothing really major happened at Toronto Pride, there definitely were things that came up.
That's just, it's really amazing when people screw things up when it comes to indigenous issues in the Toronto area, because Toronto was a one dish, one spoon territory, which is to say that it is, like in economic terms, if you know economics, it's the commons. So it was shared territory by all the neighboring regions. And the whole idea of the one dish, one spoon is so long as everyone gets along, diversity is high, and nobody is left out and nobody is poor, then that's, you know, job accomplished. You're doing the treaty. So if you're to say we had a lot of diversity this year, everybody felt welcome, one dish, one spoon was honored. There you go.
It's a really easy
land acknowledgement. It's really hard to screw up, but they keep doing it.
Somebody shared actually the webpage from the city of Toronto titled Land Acknowledgement in Toronto. And it probably is like a really easy how-to guide that was developed with substantial consultation. Anyway, but this is all to say that, you know, there's always something that goes wrong. And I think this is just another incident of the Toronto Pride executive director shooting herself in the foot in terms of how this was handled. I think some people shouldn't have Twitter. Trump and Lily higher on that list than they would maybe like to be.
I think most people shouldn't have Twitter.
I am really bad at Twitter. If anyone follows us on Twitter, I apologize. We never tweet. It's really bad. I think our thing auto-tweets when we publish a show. I managed to program it to auto-tweet.
That is fine. There's a few people that I follow on Twitter where all it is just, you know, they printed a new article or they made a new video or there's a new podcast or whatever. And it's just sent out automatically. So you get the thing and you're like, oh, now I know. It's like an RSS for people who like, don't know how to use RSS.
Yeah.
Yeah. Learn how to use RSS, by the way. It's a very powerful platform.
Absolutely. Well, we're going to jump to our first song before we dive into what really is the meat and potatoes of this week's conversation. We are going to be talking about prides.
Right.
We're going to carry that on. In the next few weeks, I do want to talk about there was a subcommittee in the House of Commons that issued a raft of recommendations on LGBT health.
Okay.
And some of those are really interesting. Actually, I also...
Do they talk about blood?
Well, there's a whole bunch of stuff in
there. Okay, good.
I'm also lining up, and you like this one, I'm also lining up an interview with an ambassador for the official plan of the City of Ottawa to the LGBT community. So how to get LGBT people who typically don't show up at your community association events to engage with the official plan of the City of Ottawa.
Ottawa doesn't have a plan.
Well, it does.
Famously.
Well, it does, but they're building a new one, and they have an actual designated ambassador to reach the community. So the question is why, and what do they hope to achieve? So I'm really excited about that. And we're hoping to reach out to the LGBT Secretariat as well.
Okay.
Now, we mentioned this a little while ago, the fact that in the federal budget with the Liberals, they were going from $3.2 million over 3 years to $20 million in 2 years.
Mm.
So the question is, why and what on earth are you going to be doing with all that money?
Oh, do you think it'll be reparations for the fruit machine scandal?
No, a lot of that is actually... So the fruit machine scandal was the purge.
Yeah.
Now, a couple of years ago, or last year, they had the apology. So the secretariat did oversee the apology, but the reparations is actually through a court settlement that's not coming out of the secretariat's budget.
Okay.
It's that the government of Canada settled with the victims of the purge. So it's litigation between the government and the purge victims, not a budget item in the secretariat.
Weird.
Yeah. If you were a victim of the LGBT purge, you can actually reach out to the secretariat or reach out to us and we'll point you in the right direction because there is a collective lawsuit called?
Class action.
Class action. There we go. There was one of those, and you may be eligible for some support.
You made the most scrunched up face when you're trying to remember that.
What is this word? But yeah, no, the purge being folks in the civil service or the military who were ousted through pressure or coercion or direct action.
Or RCMP spying.
Yeah.
Which is a thing that happens.
As a direct result of their sexuality or perceived sexuality.
Yep.
Anyway, we're jumping to Mika, Good Guy. I'm a big fan of this song, and I think it always...
I'm just a big fan
of Mika.
It's
got a nice pride feel to it, and we'll be back just after this.
It's not the cowboys that I'm missing anymore. That problem was already old in 94. Don't be offended, this might seem a little wrong.
Where have the gay guys gone?
And to to the romance when I was 14 years old, to my heroes that were dressed up in gold, only hoping one day I could be so bold. Where have all the gay guys gone?
Welcome to CanQueer, home of Canada's queer media. My name is Diluc Smith.
And I'm Sebastian.
Now, Sebastian,
yes?
Why don't you tell us the real story, like the main story that we're here about? Hamilton. This is your neck of the woods.
Well, okay. It relates to a whole bunch of other stories that we never reported either because they weren't really relevant or because
they were
so small. There's
a purge in Chechnya which slightly overshadows a protest in Dunville.
So I barely understand what happened because there's a lot of moving parts. So I texted my mom because my mom lives in Hamilton and she lives not so far away from where a lot of these events happen. She's always up to date on local events. Most people in Hamilton are up to date on local events.
So you're telling me that your mom is a bit of a, likes to know what's going on, talks to everybody. It's not genetic in any way, I suppose.
Maybe, yeah. Yes. So she sent me towards a few articles and I read a few things. But basically, so here's the superficial story, and then we're going to go into all the ways in which this story is right and all the ways in which the story is slightly mistaken. But this is the general understanding that Hamilton Pride, like a lot of prides across Canada, asked the police to not be present at their events. And then at one of their events, a bunch of conservative Christian protesters showed up and it turned into a riot, and then people were mad that the police weren't there even though they were asked to not be there. So that is the slightly wrong superficial story that kind of emerges when you read the news.
Well, there were serious altercations. superficially injured, which means, you know, no broken limbs, but like bloody noses and cuts and bruises.
So here's the main thing. So there's a whole bunch of angles that we can look at here. Let's talk about the conservative Christian group. We could talk about the relationship between Hamilton Pride and the police. And we can talk about the events themselves. So the first thing is we should probably start off talking about this group. Because this is not the first time this group has been seen. And there's been a bunch of people have been very active on social media trying to identify.
Or they have identified
who most of them are.
Yeah. And it's you know, I'm not a you know, security expert. I don't know. Yes, no, this person is clearly this person with two photos next to each other. Might not be. Mistaken identity is a thing. But they believe they've identified nearly everyone.
And, well, I mean, it's there's been a lot of people upset that they've had to do this through the community and not through the police. But I don't know if you heard about the Bike Lock Basher, who was at a Berkeley protest about a year and a half, 2 years ago. And they couldn't find this member of Antifa who used a bike lock, a U-lock, and hit somebody in the head with it. And those things are solid steel. You could easily kill somebody. Somebody went to the hospital, and then 4chan collectively figured out who the person was and developed enough evidence that they presented a dossier to the police. And they're like, yeah, it's definitely the guy who later confessed. So it's just the network of individuals at home at their computers have more resources than the police do. Unfortunately.
Well, I wanna drill in on that point for just a moment. So there was one guy, and there is a video that we saw. I think
we watched like three or four videos of
this
guy.
Let's take a quick step back here.
Right.
Quick step back.
Right.
You're at Hamilton Pride.
Right.
You're celebrating the fact that you're able to walk down the street and not get beaten up. You're celebrating the fact that we can get married. Mm-hmm. And, you know, all of this great stuff that it is a cause of celebration, but also sober remembrance of the reasons why.
Yeah.
And then you go to Gage Park, because I think Hamilton is one of those great prides that end in the park, and it's just like a big old family-friendly event. And
Gage Park is huge. It's a big park. Mm-hmm. I saw Rush there. Totally aside. But if ever anybody in the listening world is like, has Sebastian ever seen Rush live? The answer is yes. I saw them.
At Gage Park.
I saw them at Gage Park.
So at Gage Park, there were a number of, I think there were maybe about half a dozen to 10, maybe between 6 to 10 right-wing protesters.
Yes.
We know they were right-wing because they certainly weren't left of center. A lot of them were wearing the Canadian Nationalist Party T-shirts, which I think affiliates quite right of center.
Oh, yes.
Many of them are self-affiliated with the Yellow Vest movement, with a lot of very conservative.
Actually, to be clear, movements. We should probably refer to them as the Christian right, which is a slightly different version.
But they weren't all necessarily Christian. So a lot of them had Bible passages on their signage and on their shirts.
Yeah.
But it's hard to say whether or not all of them were. There was also, it's important to note that a lot of, I think, like the United Church and a couple of Protestant churches in Hamilton also mobilized in the area to be like, you know,
That's
not a good look for Christianity.
There's a few metropolitan churches in the area, and metropolitan churches are the first to have legal gay marriage in Canada, or legal same-sex marriage, I should say, although the first three were gay men, but still. Anyway, they were the first to do legal same-sex marriage in Canada, and the metropolitan church pushed for the right to do that. Yeah. So that's part of why these rights exist.
So they start there and they're shouting and they're being aggressive and sources on the internet, so grain of salt, said that they had military grade bullhorns that, like, you know, not your Walmart level bullhorn, but one that really packs a punch.
Okay,
I don't know if that's accurate. We weren't there. We can't verify that. But they had bullhorns that were very loud. Okay, what we do know.
Good bullhorns.
And they're just shouting and screaming and just sort of making certainly a kerfuffle.
Yeah.
And it got to a point where this is not the first time.
No, exactly.
So a bunch of, you know, think about where these protesters are on the right of the spectrum, and then you look at where people would be on the left of the spectrum. Some folks are sort of affiliated with that political position mm-hmm. were like, well, no, this is not acceptable. We can't just, like, why would we just let them shout at us
right.
when we're trying to celebrate? Like, that doesn't make sense. So I thought this was ingenious. They bought a whole bunch of, like, wooden poles mm-hmm. and they tied... They stapled or glued a massive black curtain to it. It was 11 feet wide by 9 feet tall, I think. It was just massive. And they just stood in front of them and literally just, like, closed the curtain on their hate.
Well, it's very similar to the angels' tactic. So the angels were people who just had these massive angel wings, and they would block the church from Tennessee. Who are they called?
Is it the Westboro Baptist
Church? Yeah, that's it. It was the Westboro Baptist Church. And every time the Westboro Baptist Church showed up, the angels would come out and block them with their huge wings. So you couldn't see the Westboro Baptist Church because you just had, like, people in flowing white robes and massive wings making it hard to see them, which it's more symbolic than anything because obviously you can see them still. But it's – and with this group, even with the curtain, you could still hear them.
Yeah.
But it was more of a symbolic thing of blocking them out.
What's important is that the people holding up this giant curtain mm-hmm. were being yelled at, riled at, shoved, pushed. The altercations got violent. Yeah. And one of the videos we saw, one of the protesters, the right-wing protester, he was dressed up in, like, hockey gear with a helmet and the padding, and he just runs up to people holding his hockey helmet and just smashes them in the face.
With his helmet,
With his helmet. And you see one of the people just, like, keel over pretty much as a result of it. And I think, you know, that is on there. That's on Twitter. It took me 3 minutes to find that?
Not even,
And, you know, people know this is there. And the community, these groups who were just, who organized the black curtain, mm-hmm. who reacted to this, they identified the guy and, like, this is so-and-so. We won't identify him here for, because we weren't able to independently verify. But they identified this individual, and you can see links to this person committing violent acts in the Eaton Center at Toronto Pride a little while later.
Well, that's the main thing about this group that I wanted to bring up, is that maybe not these exact individuals, but the general group has been spotted at other prides in Southern Ontario.
Yeah.
They've been sort of traveling around, because Dunnville and I think Kitchener were the other prides that they were spotted at.
I want to get to Dunnville in just a few moments, but I wanted to loop this conversation back to your point about that sort of crowdsourcing identities.
That's the word I was looking for. And
the reason why I wanted to bring it up,
or distributed network resources, is the other. That would be the technical term. But
is that the Hamilton police released a statement on the day of our recording, or it was in the media reported on the day of our recording, that said that you know, there was one guy hitting people with a helmet.
Yeah.
Except they can't do anything about it because none of the people who were hit in the face with a helmet have come forward to the police to say, that guy hit me in the face with a helmet.
Assault, though, there are certain crimes that the police can press charges even if the victim doesn't want you to. An assault is on that list. So if they can identify that this man has assaulted people, the police, according to the Canadian, the criminal code, have the right to press charges even without the permission of the people who were attacked.
Well,
it's on the short list of things where you can do that.
The position being put forward by Hamilton Police, which is their reason why none of these individuals that have been identified as the right-wing violent anti-gay activists, mm-hmm. The reason why they haven't been arrested is because none of the pro-gay activists have come forward to say they were smashed in the face with a helmet. And until they come forward, there's nothing we can do about it. And I can tell you now...
Oh, yeah, because...
They're not going to come forward. And I'll tell you why they won't come forward. Because one of them, I think it was Poppy Pepper. Let me get the right name here. Cedar Hopperton. I was close enough. Cedar Hopperton led or pled guilty to a anarchist riot. Well, not riot, but
well, that was another event that happened not last winter, but last winter, where a group of anarchists,
about 50 of them, it was reported,
really tore up Lock Street. Now, I used to live on Lock Street in Hamilton. And so I can tell you that is a neighborhood of small, locally owned family businesses. And the anarchist group that went down there tearing up the street were talking about corporations and how capitalism was ruining Canada. And you don't do that by targeting small, locally owned family businesses. You do that by targeting corporate headquarters, which I can tell you there are several corporate headquarters a 10-minute walk away from the location. But corporate headquarters have security. So I think they just went for low-hanging fruit. Like, I am supportive of some kinds of anarchism, but I thought this was trash. Well,
Cedar and a whole bunch of others were arrested.
Yes.
Pled guilty, served their time.
Right.
Now, Cedar Hopperton
had... And they what's it called? They have the thing where you're not allowed to do stuff for a period of time. Yeah. Parole, that's it. They have parole conditions.
And Cedar is a parole condition where they cannot be at a protest that turns violent.
Right.
And the police, after this violent altercations at Hamilton Pride, right, were like, Pride equals protest, violence equals, therefore, this person. And a few days later, they rounded Cedar up and carted them off to jail for breaking the parole conditions.
Now, it is complicated, though, because if you're at an event that you didn't know was going to turn violent, like if Cedar was just, because there was a free concert going on nearby. If Cedar was just there enjoying the concert...
Now,
how do you know? Like, are you supposed to just go home if it turns violent? Like, just, I'm out of here and scarper. And how do you prove that you left as soon as it turned? Like, there's a few complications that I could side with Cedar.
It's not entirely clear that Cedar was even there.
Okay.
Some pro-gay advocates and queer folks have been like, of course they were just trying to defend people, assuming that they were there and the narrative was correct. Now, after the fact, Cedar's been spending some time being like, no, I wasn't even there. And I was back at the house treating people with gushing nosebleeds who were hit in the face with a helmet. I was never there. And the problem is that for it to get to a parole hearing to decide whether or not the parole was breached, it will take a couple of weeks. So Cedar Hopperton has actually launched a hunger strike to expedite that process.
And this is a very easy circumstance because the police need to prove that Cedar was present. You don't even need to prove that Cedar was absent. This is a case where failure to prove is dismissible.
Mm-hmm.
Like if you cannot prove one way or the other where Cedar was at that time, then it's just an automatic dismissal.
But this all ties, and people are probably listening to this, like, who the heck is Cedar and why is this important? The reason why this is important is because there is a whole bunch of radical right-wing anti-gay activists who multiple years have antagonized and been violent towards gay people at Pride.
Yeah.
And then literally the first person they arrest after Pride is a trans activist.
Yeah. Yeah.
Even though there's video footage of a nutter smashing people in the face with a helmet.
If they had arrested both and just said, you know, the Hamilton police are intolerant of public violence, then I would have been like, oh, okay, well, that makes sense. But the order of events matters here.
Mm-hmm.
And the
perception matters.
Yeah. Absolutely.
I mean, don't get me wrong. They probably had Cedar Hopperton's address on file.
Yeah.
That's a little short drive away. They know where they are.
Yep.
Takes 2 minutes to round them up.
Yep.
These other guys, I mean, one of them was identified as being from Kitchener. Mm. There was a talk that one of the people was a hate preacher who came in from Texas. A couple of them came in from Alberta. You know, they're a little bit more difficult to find than the known radical on X Street round the corner.
Yeah.
So I get it.
Who maybe, you have on file, yeah.
Maybe, you know, they just went in the order of things that are easier to get done. But what they reinforced is the idea that the Hamilton police aren't there to protect.
Yep.
Now, you'd said earlier that the Hamilton police were told not to attend.
Right. Which is true.
Yes.
But they didn't have to listen because it's not up to the protesters. The other thing is that both of us have sat on Pride committees, and we know that you can't even file for the permits to hold an event like this until you go through, every city has its own little council, they'll all be called something different, but you'll need to go through security and you'll need to go through infrastructure and you need to go through bylaw to make sure that everything is compliant before you get your permit to do your thing. So as a part of getting the permit to put on Pride, they would have had to go through security counseling, and the police could have said, well, look, either you have security present or the event is insecure and we cannot give you the permits. Now, the police don't necessarily have to be in full uniform mixed in the crowd. They can stand on the edge, which is quite frankly where they should have been, because if you're not welcome there, but we know that Pride events in Southern Ontario for the past 3 years have a history of protesters showing up.
Yeah.
The least they should be doing is waiting in the parking lot. And as it happens, that apparently, this is as my mom tells me, and she's not exactly, you know, BBC World News in terms of reliability.
Yeah, your mom doesn't work for the CBC.
But according to her, anyway, from... According to my mom, the police were hanging out in the parking lot waiting. But the problem is that the parking lot at Gage Park is like a 5-minute run away from the amphitheater where everything was happening.
Yeah.
So even if they made it there as quickly as possible, that was still a 5-minute wait between when the violence started and when the police showed up. They should have been line of sight to the event. They should have been line of sight. And if you're hanging all the way back and you're not interfering and you're giving people their space, I think that's fine. But just being line of sight to the event means that the police are also line of sight from the event. So that if protesters show up, they know they're being watched. And it's that sort of like panopticon kind of, it just occurred to me, that's kind of an 18th century security. Anyway, the Leviathan, that idea of like, you know, just being watched by the police is enough.
Dystopian there.
It is mildly dystopian, but it's also, you know, the idea that just having the police present...
It's a deterrent.
It's a deterrent, exactly. That's what I'm trying to go for, but I kept...
Well,
I don't know.
Apparently, they were... At least one officer who was asked was ambivalent due to the fact that they were told not to have a booth. So Hamilton Priest did not have a recruitment booth at the event. Now, why this is important, and I wanted to bring this up again,
Yeah, because before the show, the two of us had complicated feelings. Because we're the police have a shoddy history, and their involvement maybe should be limited, but they should not be absent, especially if there is a history of violence. But then the Pride Committee asked them not to be there, but... Do they have the right to do that? And it's just, it's complicated. There's no easy answer.
And this is where context even comes more into play.
Oh, context makes it harder.
I mentioned how in 2018 there was a protest in Hamilton, and I think I can't remember if they were there as well in 2017. But in 2017 in Dunnville, there was the protesters were in... at the Pride.
Dunnville's near here, isn't it? Eastern Ontario. Isn't it? Where's Dunnville? What are we talking about? Dunnville. I'm going to look it up on... I'm going to Google Dunnville. Keep talking.
Yeah, so Dunnville Pride was... these protesters were there for that in 2017. Then again in 2018, they showed up a second time, except this time they knew where the Pride stuff was going to be because they were there the year before.
Well, it's also on the website, I'm sure.
Well, I mean, they must have, I mean, you could just Google it. What's happening? Where's Pride happening?
Yeah.
And in Dunnville, there is a nice public park with a great big amphitheater that they have like Canada Day stuff on, and just community things happen there.
Yeah, I saw Rush there, yeah. They have the Festival of Friends, which is a wonderful music festival.
In Dunnville. So Dunnville is about an hour outside Hamilton.
Right, yeah.
And so at this amphitheater, the second year, 2018, they show up with their giant, tall hate signs.
Okay.
And they park themselves immediately in front of the amphitheater stage.
Right.
So you can't see the stage. You can maybe see a bit of the side of the stage. And they will not move.
I think as a part of the Canadian right to protest, I can't remember the exact criminal code, you have to be a certain distance away from the thing that you're protesting.
Well, I think you're thinking of there's a bubble effect for abortion clinics.
Yeah.
So that's a law that applies, but it clearly it's not the same when it comes to Pride.
Well.
So they're right in front of this amphitheater. Okay. There were scuffles, a bit of violence, and yet again in 2018 in Dunville, they'd also asked the police not to show up. Violence escalated, mm-hmm. people got hurt,
yeah.
and then people are like, where were you? OPP, Ontario Provincial Police, where the heck were you?
Yeah.
People were making phone calls, they weren't there, what's going on? All the while, these hate preachers are completely blocking the stage, ruining what mm-hmm. would be otherwise a very pleasant day for people. And the result of that is that there were multiple complaints filed, including to the office, Office of the Independent Police Review Directorate, which is the civilian police review body in Ontario.
The OIPRD, okay. Yes. I only know them by the acronym. They're basically the ombuds for police.
Yeah, yeah. Civilian ombuds for police.
Yeah.
In Ontario, and I don't know if it's the same in other provinces.
Yeah.
I
think they have one retired officer on the committee.
There's usually a couple. They use yeah. former investigators.
But it's like 80% civilian by design.
Mm-hmm.
It's good design.
So typically with police, it may be internally reviewed, or it could be reviewed. Something, you know, an incident could be investigated by a detachment in a different city or a different area that don't have connections. But in Ontario, they have the independent Office of the Independent Police Review Directorate, which are civilians.
Yeah.
And they reviewed Dunville. And what they concluded in a 120-page report that came out not that long ago was that actually there was a failure. There was a neglect of duty here. There was a failure. Just because somebody told you not to be there, if there is a history of potential protest and violence, you have a duty to protect.
Yeah.
Regardless of what the homos in charge of Pride Parade say, these police have a duty to protect, and they failed in that duty.
Now, and if anything else, if you have a gathering of like 100 people or more, you should at least have an officer in the parking lot drinking a coffee, watching them just in case.
Yeah. But the issue emerged, there was no daily briefing, letting people know it might happen.
Yeah.
There wasn't any particular substantive email chain saying that these things might happen. They were just like, oh, we're not invited. Okay, cool. We'll carry on. They had to like drive in people from neighboring cities to respond to the escalating violence. People off duty were like putting on their socks and shoes and running over, and it was a mishandled mess.
Mm-hmm.
So the OIPRD tells Dunville, just because they told you not to be there doesn't mean you can pretend they don't exist.
Right, yeah.
And then, but a month or two later, Hamilton Pride happens, about an hour and a half away.
The least you should do is be on call.
Yeah, they should be there.
Yeah.
Now, we have seen footage from the Hamilton Pride Parade, and the police were there. They were a very prominent presence.
Yeah.
At least after that first initial
by the end of they calls. Were. Yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And I think really all of this is just a myriad of things where we're like, Hamilton Pride, couple of people arrested, possible violence, mm-hmm. right-wing protesters. But really there's a lot of context here that I think people sometimes miss.
Yeah, I think this is a structural issue. I think this is the upper ranks, because when I used to live in Hamilton, I lived in Hamilton and I worked in a gay bar, and this was in the sort of mid-2000s, and homophobia wasn't really peaking at that point in time, and we were in a pretty safe part of town. But still, individual officers, because they still have beat cops who walk the neighborhood, and every time somebody got transferred into our area, they would come in and introduce themselves. I shook the hands of maybe a dozen officers who came in to say, like, look, we know that gay bars get targeted. We just want you to know if anything happens, don't hesitate to call us. We'll be here. There's always somebody in the area. My name is Jim or whatever. So I know in terms of the individual officers, I only had positive experiences, and most of the people that I knew in Hamilton had positive experiences. But the kind of cop who's like that is not necessarily the kind of cop who's going to promote up the chain to become inspectors and chiefs and things like that. So I would not at all be surprised if it turned out that there was one key person in the upper ranks who was like, oh, all right then. And the officers on the ground, because you can see them in the background in some of the footage, sort of either running or keeping a lookout towards the end of the day. Those individual cops on the ground were probably good people, but they're not the ones who There's a chain of command. They do what they're told by their superior officer. And I think the superior officers are really the ones who need to be dragged over the coals.
In Dunville, it was the inspector in charge of the units that day.
They actually figured out the individual.
He was like, you were responsible.
You were responsible,
They threw the book at him. We're going to play Rise Up by the Parachute Club just to raise the atmospheric energy a little bit here. When before we come back and talk about really what does this mean moving forward for Prides, not just in Southern Ontario, but all over the country.
Yeah.
And we'll be back just after this. Welcome back to Can Queer, home of Canada's queer media. My name is DeLuc Smith.
And I am Sebastian.
Now, we talked before about these protesters, and let's not disagree here. Everyone has the right to protest. Pride was a protest and a riot.
We have civil rights. We are acknowledged as human beings because in the past, we were the ones that everybody disapproved of.
Yeah.
So, I mean, it's so awkward, but I often find myself defending protests because it's like, I have my rights.
But we also have the right to stand in front of your protest with a great big curtain.
Yeah.
And not be smashed in the face with a hockey helmet.
Yeah.
And I think that's the really important thing. You do not have the right to be violent in your protest.
You do
not.
Now, yeah.
Dunville Pride was thinking, third time now, this is ridiculous.
Yeah.
So what they've decided is they're moving to a venue where they can actually make it a private space so that they can control who has access in that space.
Okay.
Because the problem with places like Gage Park in Hamilton and some other of these very public spaces is that everyone has the right to protest.
Yeah, you don't have the right to restrict access to that.
Yeah, but if you're in the private space and somebody shows up with a Jesus hates homos banner, you can kick them out to the curb because it's a private space.
When I first started going to Prides, this was in the early 2000s. That might date me a little bit. Actually, when we were at the radio conference, a lot of people were alarmed because they thought that I was the younger one and you were the older one. And a lot of people were surprised by my size. I am a big lad. I know I've mentioned it before, but I am a tall and large man. But anyway, when I started going to Prides, they were, except for the parade, almost entirely in enclosed spaces that were like bars or clubs or protected spaces, venues, museums, sometimes high school gyms. I don't know, whatever. But it's actually, no, I did go to one that was in a high school gym. That was the one at Sarnia Pride. But they were in spaces where they could control all the access points.
Yeah.
And it's kind of unfortunate that we have to go back to that. But unfortunately, it is what it is, and this is a good solution to that.
I think what we may need to do, I mean, I think there was a while when Ottawa Pride was at City Hall, but they fenced it off because of the liquor sale element.
Yeah.
You know? And I think that I am a massive proponent of everyone should have access to Pride. I think that is absolutely fundamental and key. But by ensuring that anyone has access to Pride means anyone has access to Pride, including a nutter that likes to smash people in the face with a hockey helmet, who has done so at multiple Prides.
Yes.
So how do we stop this guy from getting into our Pride parades? Mm-hmm. And it's really unfortunate now that these Pride festivals are looking at, you know, these are volunteers. They don't get, you know, there's no money coming in for this. Mm-hmm. Maybe TD is giving them a bit of money, and that's a whole different conversation. But how do they now hire the fencing, hire the people to stand at the gate, hire the security in case these guys with the hate speech banners come, hire those people to kick them out and get the insurance to cover them to do so? Those costs are astronomical compared to just going to the public park and having a good time. These 12 people have ruined it for an entire community.
So for some reason, this reminds me of the issue of why so many go-kart rally places, like go-kart places, have a bar that's never attended. And the answer is, if you have liquor on the premises, then you can control who can and cannot show up, but you shouldn't be drinking and driving. So they never have actually anybody at the bar, but they have the liquor license.
Yeah.
And I think it's kind of a workaround, and there are these little things that can be done. So a lot of people want Prides to go dry because there's a lot of people with addiction issues in the community. But the thing is that if you have a bar, or if you have a liquor license in a bar but you don't actually sell booze, now you have the legal right to control who can and cannot enter. So I mean,
I don't think you need to have a bar for that. If you rent a public park in a lot of communities, you can, like, if you're renting for a wedding.
If it's a public park, you can't necessarily fence it off. Like, there's tricks. What I'm basically coming at here is that there's solutions that are not hard solutions. And I think, unfortunately, we're going to have to go back to the 90s, early 2000s in terms of bringing those old tricks back up so that we can control the entry points.
And I think the takeaway for the people listening here is that we're talking about these as old tricks and back in the 90s and the early 2000s.
Yeah.
Pride organizers did these things because for safety. For safety.
Yeah.
And I can tell you that there were people in Hamilton who, when they all left Gage Park, were being chased down the street and attacked by these protesters who'd come in. That there is footage on Twitter from these protesters themselves, mm-hmm. who all wear GoPros, saying, you know, let's kick off a big fight at the Eaton Center. And then there's footage of them beating up random people passing by. Mm-hmm. You know, these are violent individuals with radical, fundamentally, I believe, un-Canadian views,
mm-hmm.
that are putting at risk Pride festivals, which are gatherings of community all across the country. And I think that we will see a point where Pride festivals cannot guarantee your safety, and they may be forced to close as a result of this, or massively scale back.
Well, it's either that or seal the bridge, or seal the gap, seal the void, whatever, build a bridge between the community and the police, which is also going to be a lot of hard work. There's no easy answer.
And I think there's a lot of work to be done still between the police and the community on both sides.
Oh, yes.
And these incidents do nothing to help build those bridges, but hopefully
we
can continue. It's an ongoing conversation. We have run out of time.
Have we now?
We did, and there was a few other things we want to talk about. We didn't get to it.
We didn't end with watercress.
No, but that's okay, because we're going to end with a song from 1969.
Because, you know, this is a little beef that both you and I have expressed, that everyone keeps going on about the 50th anniversary of the Stonewall riots.
Mm-hmm.
But here in Canada, we should probably be spending a lot more time talking about the 50th anniversary of the decriminalization of homosexuality.
Yeah, the partial decriminalization of homosexuality.
Well, it's still a big deal.
Absolutely.
And that started the civil rights side, from like the legal perspective in Canada. It's a huge deal, and I really wish more people were talking about that.
And let's be honest here, Stonewall didn't kick off the gay rights movement. There were
there was advocacy and
movements coming out of Europe, coming out of Los Angeles.
Yeah.
You know, New York, this riot was just a linchpin moment that you could hang your hat on.
Yeah.
It wasn't the start.
No.
And it certainly was not the Canadian start.
No, that was Operation Soap.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And we are playing homage to the Canadian LGBT history.
Right.
With this, I don't think R.B. Greaves is Canadian.
No.
But we're playing out with Take a Letter. Is it Mary?
Maria.
Maria.
That was featured in the Priscilla Queen of the Desert soundtrack. But it's from 1969.
And it's a great track.
Yeah.
And we'll be back next week. My name has been Luke Smith.
And I've been Sebastian. And thank you for listening.
Last night, as I got home, about a half past ten, there was the woman I thought I knew in the arms of another man. I kept my cool, I ain't no fool, let me tell you what happened then. I packed some clothes and I walked out, and I ain't going back again. So take a letter, Maria, address it to my wife. Say I won't be coming home, gotta start a new life. We'll take a letter, Maria, address it to my wife. Send a copy to my lawyer, gotta start a new life. You've been many things, but most of all, a good secretary to me. And it's times like this I feel you've always been close to me. Was I wrong to work nights to try to build a good life? All work and no play has just cost me a while. So take a letter, Maria, no, address it to my wife. Say I won't be coming home, gotta start a new life. Well, take a letter, Maria, address it to my wife. Send a copy to my lawyer, gotta have a new life. What a man loves a woman, it's hard to understand that she would find more pleasure in the arms of another man. I never really noticed how sweet you are to me. It just so happens I'm free tonight. Would you
you'd like to have dinner with me, go take a letter, Maria, address it to my wife. Say I'm gonna be coming home, gotta start a new life. Oh, take a letter, Maria, address it to my wife. Send a copy to my lawyer, gotta have a new life. We'll take a letter.